Hi, and welcome back to A Twist of Fate. This week's episode, we are talking about Juan Corona. Juan Corona was born in Mexico on February 7, 1934, and had first come to the United States when he was only 16 years old. At first, he had been working in the Imperial Valley picking carrots and melons before he had moved to Sacramento Valley. Natividad Corona, Juan's half-brother, had moved to California in 1944 to work and had settled down in Marysville, just across the river from Yuba City. Juan had moved to the area in May of 1953 after his brother had suggested it and found work on a local ranch. After his first marriage to Gabriela Hermosillo in 1953, Juan had married Gloria Moreno in 1959, and the couple had four daughters. In December of 1955, a flood had happened on the Yuba and Feather Rivers. It had been one of the most widespread and destructive floods in recorded history of Northern California. A gush of water had broken through the West Levee, flooding 100,000 acres and had killed 74 people. Juan had been suffering from a schizophrenic episode and had been committed to the DeWitt State Hospital in Auburn, California on January 17, 1956. While at the facility, he was diagnosed with schizophrenic reaction paranoid type. Corona received 23 electroshock therapy treatments before it was pronounced that he had recovered and was released 3 months later. After he was released from the hospital, he was deported back to Mexico. However, Juan returned to the States in 1962 using his green card. Despite his schizophrenic episodes and hostile temper, Juan was also known as a hard worker. The same year he returned, he had gotten a job as a licensed labor contractor and was put in charge of hiring others to staff the local fruit ranches. Even after a few good years, Juan had been committed back to the DeWitt State Hospital in March of 1970. That next year, he had applied and been denied for welfare. On May 19, 1971, a farm owner who had hired Juan to bring in field workers had noticed a freshly dug hole in the peach orchard. However, the next day, it was filled in. When the hole was uncovered, in it were the remains of a man who had been brutally murdered. In one of the graves, officers found two meat receipts with Juan's signature, and in another two Bank of America deposit slips with his name and address were found. These pieces of evidence cushioned the case even more. Police served Corona with a search warrant the morning of May 26th and had arrested him. They found two bloodstained knives, a pistol, and bloodstained clothes. He had written down 34 names and dates that included seven of his known victims' names. The prosecution started calling this Corona's death list. He had given jobs to some of the workers on the ranches where some of the bodies were found, and had housed a lot of the men that worked for him in a bunkhouse on the Sullivan Ranch where most of his victims were found. Corona's assigned public defender had hired a few psychiatrists to examine him, even though Sheriff Roy Whitaker had said that Corona wasn't in any kind of danger. He was still moved on the 30th to the new jail in Marysville for security reasons. He was transferred back on June 2nd for his arraignment, which had been closed to the public. Corona pleaded not guilty, and his arraignment ended with a date set for his preliminary hearing. The search of Corona's property ended on June 4th, with a total of 25 male victims found, and only four were left unidentified. On June 14th, his public defender was replaced by a privately retained defense attorney, Richard Hawk. An agreement was made that Hawk would be granted full literary and dramatic property rights to his life story, which included everything the prosecution had against him. Even before his new representation had seen his medical records, Hawk fired the psychiatrists and decided Corona wasn't going to plead not guilty by reason of insanity. However, on June 18th, Corona started to complain about chest pains and had been taken to a hospital where it was determined that he had suffered from a mild heart attack. A month later, the grand jury returned with a 25-count murder indictment against Corona, and in July, he was back in the hospital after complaining about not being able to sleep due to chest pains. It took a year for the case to go to trial. The California Supreme Court revoked the death penalty in the state on February 18, 1972, as they ruled it was unconstitutional, cruel, and unusual. As a result, Corona's case couldn't be tried as a capital case, and his trial started on September 11, 1972 in Fairfield. The jury selection took a few weeks, and his trial lasted 3 months. Even though Corona denied any fault, he wasn't called to the stand to to testify in his defense, and the defense didn't even call any witnesses to the stand. On January 18, 1973, after 45 hours of deliberation, the jury returned with a verdict. Judge Richard Patton had sentenced Crona to 25 life sentences that he would serve consecutively without the possibility of parole. Even though he was charged with that many life sentences, the Department of Corrections said that Crona would still be eligible for parole in 7 years. They cited Section 669 of the Penal Code, which mandated that when someone is given life in prison with or without the possibility of parole, then any other convictions will be merged and run concurrently. He was first sent to Vacaville's California Medical Facility 9 miles from Fairfield due to his heart problems. That same year, Corona had been stabbed 32 times in his cell because he had bumped into another inmate and failed to say excuse me. 4 men had been charged with assault with a deadly weapon after he had been transferred to Correctional Training Facility in Soledad. His wife filed for divorce in 1974 and had been granted on July 30th. The California Court of Appeal had granted Juan Corona a new trial on May 18, 1978, based on his appeal and petition for the writ of habeas corpus that had been filed by his lawyers Alan Axelrod and Michael Mendelson. The court based their decision on 2 main issues that had been brought to light by the appellate counsel. First, the trial counsel didn't do the requisite legal or factual investigations that were required. Second, the trial counsel, obtaining the publication rights as a part of his fee, had created a prohibited conflict between the counsel and Corona. His second trial started on February 22, 1982, in Hayward, California. His defense hypothesized that the real murderer of the ranch workers was most likely Natividad Corona, who had died 8 years earlier in Guadalajara, and was accused of attacking Romero Ray at his own cafe. This time, the defense called over 50 witnesses, and Corona was called to testify in his own defense. However, he was only asked 2 questions. He was asked, "Do you understand the state has accused you of killing 25 men?" To which he replied, "Yes." And the last question he was asked was, "Did you have anything to do with killing those men?" To which he replied, "No." Before the defense turned the questioning over to the prosecution. Thrown off by the defense's tactic, the prosecution requested a short recess to get their heads together and to prepare over 630 pieces of evidence for their cross-examination. Corona was questioned about multiple vehicles that he had used at the ranch where he worked and where he had lived, in which police had found some weapons. The second trial lasted 7 months, ending with Corona once again being convicted of all the murderers on September 23, 1982. After the trial ended, the foreman told press that the most incriminating piece of evidence was the death list, because the labor contractor had no reasonable explanation to why it existed. In 1992, Corona was transferred from CTF to Corcoran State Prison, where he stayed in the sensitive needs yard because of his dementia. The now 85-year-old was denied parole 8 times before he died on March 4th, 2019, due to natural causes. This has been A Twist of Fate. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, if you have any questions or requests, feel free to message me. Have a great day.